All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. Keep listening for actionable tips and tricks to incorporate eco-friendly practices into your daily life.
We've been featured by Apple as the number one podcast for conscious consumers, and we can't wait to welcome you into our community of changemakers. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Laura. We're the founders of Brightly.eco, the new platform for conscious consumers. We believe in supporting all creatures, great and small.
And our team of experts show you how to live and shop responsibly by sharing world-changing lifestyle ideas, products, and more. To read show notes from Good Together and to browse all of the planet-friendly goodness that we feature, head to brightly.eco/podcast.
And to help spread the word about the podcast, tap on this episode and share Good Together with your friends and family. A simple text message helps us grow and create change around the world.
This episode is brought to you by Sheets and Giggles, a company with a punny name but a seriously sustainable mission to make better bedding for everyone.
Sheets and Giggles bedding consists of sustainably made 400 thread count eucalyptus sheets that are static-free, moisture-wicking, use no insecticides or pesticides, and are half the cost of their store-bought competition. Good Together listeners get 15% off at checkout by using the code BRIGHTLY at sheetsgiggles.com. You might have heard the term circular economy thrown around before, but what does it actually mean? Well, in theory, it revolves around eliminating waste and the continual use of resources. But when it comes to the fashion industry's practices, one company's definition often doesn't match up with the others. In today's episode, Lisa and I sit down with Paul Dillinger, the Vice President, Head of Global Product Innovation and Premium Collection Design for Levi Strauss & Company. We all know that Levi's stands for quality and longevity in their products. They have been in business for over 163 years, after all. But we had a fascinating conversation with Paul about a new type of denim that Levi's has developed that can actually be recycled into new pairs of jeans over and over again, not just recycled for other purposes like insulation, etc. Lisa and I learned a ton, and I know you will too. Let's get into it. Okay, welcome to Good Together, Paul. We're so excited to have you.
I'm really excited to be talking to y'all today. This is a great time. We've got some exciting product, and it's a really, it's an interesting time to think about changing the way we've been consuming, changing the way we've been designing and making. And so it seems like a nice inflection point for all of us to sort of pause.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think right now we all are faced with more time than ever before on our hands. It's giving us a great opportunity to be mindful, like you just mentioned. So listeners, we're super excited to have Paul Dillinger on the Good Together podcast. Paul is the Vice President, Head of Global Product Innovation and Premium Collection Design for Levi Strauss & Company. And I love that we're having the chance to talk with Paul for many reasons, but one reason is because when we think about heritage craft American brands that are known for products that last a long time, I think everyone has Levi's pop into their head. And I'm not just saying that. I think it's just been a brand that we've all trusted for years. So the fact that Levi's is taking a step towards circular fashion, we're super excited. So Paul, I wonder if you wanted to give us a really brief intro of yourself and sort of what you do at Levi's.
Okay, sure. Well, thank you for that introduction. I It's a fancy title, and it's easiest to just say I'm a fashion designer. That was my training. I went to undergraduate and graduate school to get my BFA and my MFA in fashion design, and I design clothes. But Levi's, there's a recognition that beyond just the seasonal cycle, spring clothes, fall clothes, spring shows, fall shows. Beyond that, just sort of 6 month normal fashion cadence, there are some design challenges that take more time. There are some opportunities that you can't tackle a problem, resolve it, deliver it in just a season. Sometimes the real big changes, they need a little more time to be cultivated, researched, developed, and thoughtfully executed. And those sorts of projects fall to me. So rather than designing for next fall or next spring, I'm thinking about a systems-based approach to changing the design methodology entirely 5 years from now, or new materials that might actually deliver value 10 years from now. It's more of the fashion skill set, but on a set to a longer view. And which is interesting because we're at a company that sort of straddles this, or I'm at a company that straddles the fashion versus utility space. You know, Levi's were essentially a tool at first for miners to make the gold fields, but we were, our value was predicated on technical innovation, right? It was the adding the copper rivet to a garment that was wearing out in certain spots. And we added that rivet and it made it strong in those spots. And then we patented it. And then we became we created this whole category, became the world's biggest purveyor of denim, which then slowly changed from being a tool to being an object of fashion. So at once we're this company that has invented a durable thing, and it's durable both in the form and also emotionally durable, that people love their jeans and they last and they become like good friends. But we're also part of a fashion cycle, and we do seasonal product and we try to stay relevant and stay ahead of trend and resonant with contemporary consumers. And so there's a dynamic tension in the Levi's, and this sort of struggle to understand is sort of carefully weaving those two together.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad to hear that Levi's is taking kind of this stance, and your career to Levi's is kind of signifies how important this direction is for the company. So for the next question, I want to ask to kind of get straight into the meaty part of our discussion. The focus of our conversation today is circular fashion, right? It's a relatively new term and probably it's not well known to the consumers at large. So Paul, I was wondering if you can define this term for us, what circular fashion is, what it is not, and what it means for Levi's specifically.
Sure, that's a great question. When we think about Levi's, when we first designed the first, say, 501, back then it was called the XX, maybe 130, 140 years ago. We purchased the fabric, we made the garment, we sold it, and that was sort of the end of our consideration of that. If we had anticipated that we would be making so many, if we thought through at that time, are we making this jean in a way that it, at the end of its life, it can be used or useful, or that it not be problematic? Most products are not considered that way. I don't think whoever is the first person to invent the cell phone, I don't think they ever imagined that every person on the planet would have one almost. And if they had, they would probably have put a little more thought in maybe a technology that wasn't dependent on rare earth minerals that are so hard to find, right? That we've designed ourselves in so many cases into corners where the industries that we are so excited about when they're born become these behemoths that produce unanticipated consequences. In the case of fashion, you've got a tremendous amount of waste from the huge excesses of product being made, sold, and quickly discarded. But you've also got tremendous impact on the material creation side, right? In the case of Levi's, for example, we have a life cycle assessment that tells us about fresh water used over the full life of the garment, from the material cultivation all the way through its use phase and end of life. It's about 3,781 liters of fresh water. That's, almost enough fresh water for five people for a year for drinking water. Now, for one gene, 3,781 liters. Now, but just on the material side of that, just growing the cotton, 68% of that, so about 2,565 liters. So this inordinate amount of a resource impact on the material creation. And then conventionally, there's been an assembly process that doesn't consider the end of life and how do you, how can that garment, is that garment optimized for the recovery of the value of that material? And in the case of cotton, there have never been really good technologies that would even allow for the responsible recovery and reuse. Yet, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, you can recycle it and turn it into insulation. I'm like, well, that's great, but we need to turn it into new jeans, because turning it into insulation is fine, but it doesn't decrease that, you know, 3,781 liter impact for the garment or the 2,565 liter impact specifically for the cotton. So the the idea of circular fashion is to create full industrial systems, industrial ecosystems, whereby the product that we make and then sell can be built out of old product that preceded it, prior generations of product, and is designed in a way that it can be active and actively and easily deconstructed and then recovered and then turned into a new garment. And this, there.
Absolutely. No, I mean, I just want to jump in here because I think it's so interesting that in general, when people get a pair of leggings that is using, you know, plastic bottles, for instance, they are excited about that. But what they don't realize is once those leggings are done, they're not really going to be recycled, obviously, into new leggings.
Right. Right. What if those leggings were actually a blend of recovered plastic bottles in the form of polyester and cotton? You know, there's a lot of 50-50 cotton poly garments out there. Well, good for you for valuing the recovery of that plastic bottle, taking the plastic bottle out of the landfill. But by creating an intimate blend fiber, blending cotton with polyester, almost impossible to decouple those. So you've expressed the value of recycling for one generation, but you haven't really closed the loop on the thinking and considered, well, can that thing that has been recycled then further again be recycled? And so often, one of the challenges with the sustainability conversation is that we're really proud of ourselves for single attributes, single components. Oh, this is recycled plastic bottles, but great. Has it been assembled into a garment that is entirely made out of recycled plastic bottles such that the recycling of that garment is easy and efficient and doesn't generate a lot of waste? So if you were to design with recycled plastic bottles, you would want to make sure, you know, let's say I was going to design a Sherpa fleece trucker jacket. Well, I would need both the exterior material to be all recycled plastic, or at least a like material, and the Sherpa lining, but also all the labels. I would need the snaps up the front to be made out of the, like, you'd have to have every component, the thread, the interfacing, the care, country of origin, and content labels, all of it made out of the same exact type of polymer. And in fact, that is what we do. That is, we have a small area of Levi's that is focused on that kind of highly disciplined deconstruction of the material assembly and reconfiguration of that assembly to make sure it's always like materials that are optimized for an eventual end-of-life recovery system. And so we've done that with nylon board shorts, where absolutely every component is made out of nylon. And then when it's done, it just drops into a nylon recovery system. With polyester, we've done that. We've also been doing that with cellulosics, starting initially with pure cotton garments, then blending cotton linen, cotton hemp, and each season we're tackling a new technical material challenge, but each of these seasonal challenges are generally backed up by 3 or 4 years of R&D, because here's the kick with circularity and circular fashion. It's really popular and really sort of got a lot of great buzz in sort of like the executive tiers of the fashion industry, because it is offered up as a promise that you can continue with your rampant consumption and excessive growth. And you can do it, and you can forgive yourself all of your guilt over your environmental impact, because you're now circular, yay. And it sort of becomes this excuse, double the business, half the impact, you know, this idea that we could, you don't have to constrain consumption. But in fact, what circularity is when it's done correctly, it is so disciplined and does put legitimate constraints on what can and can't be made. You don't have all the choices that you have with normal fashion. You have to give up a few things. If you do it right and make a garment that's truly viable for circular recovery and redeployment, the complexity actually constrains the industry. A true circular industry wouldn't be able to double its size with zero impact. What it would actually probably be is half the size and the right size impact. And it's a lot of times it's discussed as the circular economy. And discussing it as an economy presupposes its profitability. We need to understand it as a circular ecosystem. And if in fact the economy doesn't prove to be profitable, that's just the truth. We have to let the science and the limitations of our access to natural resources be a legitimate constraint and not approach it as this sort of flywheel for massive business growth mm-hmm. without guilt.
I love that thinking. This is such music to our ears to hear from you guys, that you are going into, circular fashion and producing this material, putting all of the resources and work into it, knowing that this is actually the ultimate true mission of circular fashion, and not just like, again, as you're saying, continuing with our consumption habits that cannot be sustained as they are right now. Well, here we're getting into one of my favorite parts of this discussion is, of course, your new Wellthread, your Wellthread denim line. I'm actually wearing the jeans right now. This line is billed as Levi's most sustainable jean yet. It's made out of 60% organic cotton and 40% circular. We'll talk about it in more detail, of course, but it's a breakthrough material made from worn-out textiles, in this case, 50% recycled denim and 50% sustainably sourced viscose, and it's very comfortable. Again, I can vouch for that. We don't forget, we don't want to forget your partner on this project, a Swedish startup called RenewCell that has been working on a solution to recycle textile waste since 2012. A year and a half ago, RenewCell, they opened a recycling plant outside of Stockholm, which can produce 7,000 tons of cellulose, a fashion raw material made from textile waste every year. That's enough to make 30 million t-shirts. That's amazing. But even 30 million t-shirts is just the start. So Paul, I'm wondering if you can tell us all the details about this campaign. Where are you right now with this line, with this campaign, and where do you see it going?
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that you have the jean, that you touch it, feel it. And so let's level set that. Does it look and feel like a jean?
Absolutely. Oh yeah. See, yeah. I would never tell the difference. Yeah.
Right. And why this technology is so meaningful is to understand where recycling technology has been. There's been product on the market that you could, that has been made with recycled cotton for a while. But normally when you've been recycling cotton, you're taking you have long fibers of cotton that have been grown. They've been spun together and twisted together to make a yarn. That yarn has been woven into a fabric, and that fabric's been made into a garment. Then you're taking that garment and you're hacking it up to pieces, because you have to unmake the garment, unweave the fabric, unspin the yarn. Well, you end up, and the only way to do that up until now has been to just start chopping it. So you end up with really like short, what we call staple. The staple length is the natural length of the fiber. You come up with really, really short staple cotton. And when the cotton staple length is short, you can't twist it into a fine, long, strong yarn. You have to blend it with virgin material that has that natural strength. So even though maybe a jean could have 15% recycled cotton, which is the absolute sort of threshold that you would put recycled into denim and still have it maintain its strength, what would be happening is over a very short period of time after home laundries, because this normal recycled cotton has been that short, fine, little short fuzzy staple, it just washes out. That's the dryer lint that you find, that you collect from the dryer anytime you put your clothes in the dryer. It's the sad little short recycled yarn. So they just fall right out. So you may have started with 15% recycled content in a conventional scenario, but after about maybe three or four home laundries, your garment's just 15% lighter because all of that recycled cotton's just been washed away. This is a totally different approach. What it says instead of chopping it up and just using it as poor quality cotton, this process using totally green chemistry system pulps old cotton, breaks it down to base level cellulose, which is sort of the plant material that all plants are made out of. And it turns it into sort of the goo, right? That is then blended with the goo of responsibly sourced wood. And it is re-extruded into a long continuous filament yarn. And it makes something like a lias, so like a, think about if rayon were sustainable, it could be a more of a rayon-like feeling. So there are lots of different forms of viscoses out there. And this one happens to be made out of 50% old denim, but it's reconfigured and reprocessed in a way that actually creates a frankly a better full long filament fiber that has properties of softness, but it also has properties of strength. And this doesn't wash out. This doesn't like go away. This is actually a really, really high quality yarn. And plus this added feature of softness. So what we've done is actually taken the cotton, recovered it, and actually improved it. And so now this is right now this garment claims about 20% recycled denim. Renewasol, our wonderful partners in outside of Stockholm, are actually working on increasing that blend level. But they're doing it in a way that they're not offering either a weaker garment or a poor quality garment, or a garment that's going to lose that recycled value, retains it.
It's really high quality. I'm laughing because I literally, while we were talking, FedEx came and dropped off my jeans to me.
Oh, great.
So yay. Perfect timing. Perfect. And yeah, I just have to say they really are super. I mean, first of all, you cannot tell the difference between this and a standard pair of Levi's. Now, I would say that they're soft, though. And I know you were just talking about the soft quality. But again, I think it's really neat that you've developed a product that is not going to be sort of a secondhand quality, because I think oftentimes when people hear ethical and sustainable products, they sometimes think they might have to compromise a little bit on price or quality just because it's good for the environment. So just wanted to point that out.
No, I love that you brought that up, because that is the false dilemma. That is the false choice that the fashion industry has kind of clung to for a long time. It could either be pretty and pleasing, or it could be ethical. And that's BS. The opposite of pretty is ugly. The opposite of ethical isn't neutral. It's unethical, right? So we have to understand that the choice is you can have an ethical pretty thing, or you could have an unethical pretty thing. You could have an ugly ethical thing or an unethical ugly thing, but it's not a single continuum. And there's been this sort of like the archetypal sort of sustainable fashion advocate that's very kind of crunchy, like a lot of hemp, a lot of linen, kind of coarse fibers, a little maybe doesn't fit well, like there's this trope that I really want to disprove. I don't think we don't have to compromise. We just have to be really thoughtful about how we put these new sustainable products together, and we can't go through the same rote learned process of just specking out any old thread or any old material. You have to be really mindful of the materials you assemble, where they came from, know your materials. You also need to be really, really mindful about how they're going to be taken apart in the end. And, you ask the question about what circularity is and what it isn't. A lot of people think that things like take-back programs or rental models or leasing models or swapping or sharing, those are all great ways to extend the useful life of the garment in the form we know it, but that is extended linearity. It's not actually circularity. So they're both important movements in ethical fashion, but the circularity piece is the one that's that real nerdy and sciencey kind of like, is it like for like materials? Is it PET7 plus PET5. Nope, those can't go together. You have to separate your polymers. These sort of really sort of geeky sciencey kind of things. But if you hold as your standard to deliver product that is as comfortable, fashionable, relevant, and attractive as any other piece that you would develop and design and deliver in a non-circular model, if you make that your standard, it's a really tough problem. But when you can crack that nut, and I believe we are getting really close to cracking that up, you come up with a gene like this. that's going to look great on you as well, I'm sure.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll get back to today's episode in just a second, but we wanted to take a break to recognize a few companies that we've partnered with.
Right now, there are thousands of ethical brands out there, which can be confusing and overwhelming. This is why Brightly exists. We are your guide to doing good in the world through conscious consumerism.
We personally vet and try products from every single brand that we partner with, both on our podcast and on our platform, Brightly.eco, so that you don't have to do the research yourself.
Partnerships like this are what helps Brightly and our community grow and increase our impact. Thank you. Laura, you've probably heard me talk all the time about my love for Sheets and Giggles. I've been sleeping on their new sustainable eucalyptus sheets for the past 3 months straight. I recommend them 1,000%. Every week, I wash them and put them back on the bed right away. They're my go-to sheets. All of my other sheets, even the ethical ones, are taking a long break.
After hearing you rave about them for so long, I finally got to try their new eucalyptus comforter. I'm a weirdo. I really like having a comforter on my bed all the time, even in the middle of the summer, and I haven't been waking up hot when I've been using this one from Sheets and Giggles. It's a great ethical and sustainable alternative to the down one we used to use that's now sitting on our guest bed. Another thing I love about Sheets and Giggles is that they don't use plastic packaging, and their materials don't use pesticides, so they're kind to our animal and insect friends.
They also plant a tree for each sheet set that is sold, and they are passionate about giving back. They give 10% off to their customers who donate their old sheets to homeless shelters and have donated over $40,000 to Colorado COVID relief.
That's awesome. Good Together listeners get 15% off at checkout by using the code BRIGHTLY at sheetsgiggles.com.
Yeah, it's very flattering. I forgot this is a wide leg jeans, and I forgot that I actually used to have a pair of them a couple of years ago. It's definitely, I guess it's coming back, the trend, but it looks really nice and makes your legs look super long. But I always wanted to point out, whenever we talk to ethical brand founders, the successful brand founders, they always know that, you know, your product should absolutely stand on its own in terms of quality and design and look and feel and touch, and the price point too. It has to be able to compete with traditional non-ethical brands, because the mission, the environmental friendliness, it's never enough for a consumer. So I think this is kind of the approach that you guys are taking with these jeans, and I think it will pay off.
Well, I think it's, you know, we often, I love that there is a burgeoning consciousness in the fashion consumption, right? There's an ethical fashion consumer that really does care and really does want to know. And that's great. I don't need to worry about them. I need to worry about the people who don't care and don't want to know. And I want to make sure that I'm slipping product into their wardrobe that they don't even know or care about how much water it may have saved, or how the process may be better for, I just want them to love the product. Put all the hard work of knowing about that science crap on me. Let me take that on, because I love the challenge. But let's let the consumer just find the joy of clothes that are beautiful, because at the end of the day, if it isn't something that you love because it looks good on you, if it doesn't flatter, if it's not comfortable, you're not going to wear it. So if it's not consumer friendly, it doesn't matter how many trees you save or how many gallons of water you save. If it's just another purchase that's going to sit in the back of the closet not doing anything, that's as unsustainable as it gets. You know, the most sustainable fashion is the thing you love so often that you wear it every day. And I think we've all been stuck at home not shopping, right? So we surrounded by purchases we probably wished we hadn't made, because we could really use that money right now. We'll notice none of us are naked, right? We're still like, we, nobody shopped for 5 months, it seems like, and let's go forward on the premise that if we're going to ask people to spend money they don't have on product that they know they don't need, it damn well better mean something. It better be meaningful, important product. And I really think these jeans sort of live up to that, because the other thing is, circularity as a concept has been discussed ad nauseum in the sustainable fashion space for, you know, I've been working on projects related to circularity for a better part of a decade. This is the first time, I believe, I shouldn't make this unqualified claim, but to my knowledge, the first time a jean has been sent out that's been made from recovered old jeans But we've also worked with RenewCell to prove that the way we designed and assembled this gene is recoverable by their system. So we sent a gene back to them to have them look at it and validate that the gene itself would be recoverable within their own system, proving that these genes made out of second generation material actually can be turned into a third generation material. And so it's the first time that it had looked like a C, and we finally got it to look like an O. We finally kind of closed that loop by designing in a way that it can go back within the system that made it in the first place. And that's the excitement here, is that not only is it not a compromise on quality or compromise on comfort, but it's actually one of the first strong proof points that circularity isn't a conjectural future state. Circularity can happen now. And these genes are available in all three regions globally, you know, like men's, women's. It's not a small release. It's sort of a real robust and, you know, industry push forward. So it's really exciting.
That's so exciting. And I think that our listeners are going to learn so much about what the term circular fashion really means coming out of this episode, because I think we all kind of came into it with a few different notions. And so I think by sharing this real world example, we're really actively able to educate. And I think that's great. The other thing I wanted to point out was, you know, we've all been at home and, you know, to your point, we're not sitting around naked, but you know, what we are doing is I believe we're all reaching for like three or four pieces that we love and wearing the heck out of them. And so I'm hoping that people can use this time to say, okay, I had a really, a wonderful favorite fleece jacket that I've kind of now worn to pieces. How do I go find something that's similar, but it's going to last me a long time? Because now that we're putting our clothing, it might not be our business clothing, but we're putting some clothing through its paces. I hope that people can kind of have that mindful reset. Go ahead.
We get to totally redefine what does business clothing mean, right? Because now business clothing and pajama can be, they can be the same thing. And it's also really fun to see now that you're not worried about getting spotted at the cafeteria at work or whatever, wearing the same outfit in 1 week. Now that you're just dressing for yourself, what are you really choosing? And I think that's a really great place to start, I think that's a really great place to start the discussion about what consumption needs to be going forward. Now we prioritize comfort. That's why I'm so excited that this gene with circulose is so comfortable, because no one wants to be sitting around their sofa on a Teams call or Zoom call for work in like a really, you know, a stiff, rigid pair of raw, you know, denim that's never been broken in. I think comfort and softness has to be part of our discussion in ways that it hadn't been before. It's less about presentation, and it's more about making you feel good, because boy, we all need to feel good right now. So I think there's a lot of change that's going to happen in the way we consume and what it means to be dressed and what it means to feel, I think looking your best is going to be feeling your best.
That's a great, it gave me a great inspiration for the next question that we were just thinking to ask you about. So what are some consumer trends that you're kind of anticipating? I mean, especially again, in the age of COVID, I mean, we've done episodes in the beginning of coronavirus, and now we're just kind of completely adjusted to this new reality. So I'm curious what consumer trends and behavior changes and shifts you're expecting coming out of COVID. But I'm also curious about maybe some consumer changes that you've kind of seen over the course of your career and kind of where that led and doesn't give you hope, hopefully.
Yeah, I think one of the interest in hindsight, a really interesting phenomenon, especially in the denim industry, was that rise of the premium denim market and a category that had been, had its price point capped below $100, was suddenly in the late 90s, early 2000s, it suddenly had this surge forward to 148, 178, and this notion of the fancy premium jean, right? I think we can all remember those brands, and they had some, you know, fancy back pocket.
Oh, yes. Was on every right. person's wish list.
Yeah. And if we think about that, first of all, do any of us still have those in our closet?
No.
I certainly have pairs of Levi's that were purchased prior to that phase when nowhere near working for the company. I was still living in New York working for other brands, but I had Levi's that I bought. You know, I have Levi's from the early 90s that are still in rotation today. Whereas all those many of those premiums, quote unquote, premium styles came and went. And if we pull back and look at why were they premium? Well, they were, by and large, many of them were small unit production made in the United States, so fundamentally higher labor. But they were often off of the same cloth as a less premium jean that was, you know, that was made in a different industrial context. And it was a lot of branding and a little bit of embroidery on the back pocket, but the value was purely an invented value. It was not an objective value. It was not a value that was embedded in the product you purchased. You were buying into a series of externalities, but fundamentally the object you purchased was in no way, I mean, the cotton came out of the ground, watered by the same water, same minerals, often likely same fertilizers, pesticides, herbicides, unfortunately. But, you know, in many cases, a vertically integrated specialty store at the mall that was selling a jean for $38 was that same exact quality could have been found at one of the, you know, denim boutiques in LA on a $200 jean. There was no objective material distinction except for a little bit too much fancy design work. I think the interesting evolution is that we're coming around. It doesn't feel like we've rejected that, but what we've done is we've realigned what constitutes premium, where we find value. I think a lot of people would rather have a great pair of Japanese salvaged Levi's jeans that they know is going to last a long, long time. And there's a certain value that reflects. And I think people want to be associated with those sorts of values. If they're going to advertise, they want to advertise valuing the durable, authentic quality. That's what they want to celebrate with. It's what they want to associate with, not necessarily the of the moment jean with the flashiest back pocket or the most pronounced boot cut or anything. I think there's been an evolving consciousness. And we're not to the point where we constrained consumption, but we've certainly realigned consumption around things that matter more. And now the next piece of work is to say, now that we've been, you know, working from our sofas and voting for that, basically the two sweatshirts and one pair of shorts that I like most, right? How do I make sure I'm shopping against those standards? What are the, what qualities can I assign to those things that I wear the most? And now I need to make sure that I'm bringing that list of qualities to, I mean, not to the mall, obviously, but, you know, when going shopping online, being more mindful of the things that are really triggering affinity and rejecting some of the, you know, the sillier motivations. I sit alone in my apartment surrounded by a bunch of bad mistaken purchases, things I should never have bought. And they're everywhere and they haunt me. You know, they call at me at night and say, why did you buy me? Like, there are things that I've even bought since going in lockdown at the very beginning when I was like thinking I was still going to need, you know, outfits for, you know, spring vacation that came and I haven't worn. And I really rethinking about what matters and where I want to invest. I think that's what's next. I think we've made progress rejecting the sort of useful and embracing rejecting the useless and embracing the useful. And I think it will go further. And we're going to, I think, really start to focus and sharpen our consumption habits.
We are coming to the end of the episode, Paul, but we love to ask our guests the same three questions. So the first question, we always love to leave our listeners with actionable tips that they can implement in their everyday life and make their life more ethical. So do you have some quick actionable tips that can be very simple? Any of your favorites, share with us, please.
Okay. Well, so I guess I'd say one tip for living and one tip for shopping. So I think at all times and in all things that you do, look people in the eye and become aware of them as people and embrace the likely unknown backstory on everyone that, you know, as bad a day as you are having, they're having it worse. As happy as something can make you, maybe your kindness can make them equally happy. Just look people in the eye. Then as far as ethical consumption, you know, which is what we're talking about, if you see something you like and you know that you really want to buy, it is really important that you don't buy it. You don't. You look at it and then you walk away. if when you're having dinner that later that evening with your partner, your friends, like, are you thinking about it? When you go to bed at night, ask yourself to try to describe it, like really out loud, thoroughly describe the thing that you were about to buy. What, I mean, did it strike you enough to make an impression that you can recall 10 attributes? Like, when you wake up the next day, are you thinking about it? Or has it kind of slipped your mind? And you'll find in a lot of cases, it slipped your mind, right? Even if you could describe it when you went to bed at night, you probably can't describe it in the morning. That's a strong argument for not buying it. If however, you can recite all those 10 attributes, everything that you loved about it, and you know exactly what hole it fills in your closet, go ahead and buy it, right? Like, don't be a monk, don't deprive yourself entirely of the joys of fashion, right? We love it for a reason, right? But just be a little more diligent about how you purchase, right?
Yeah, it's wonderful. And then our last question we have for you, Paul, is one that we love to ask folks, which is, what excites you the most about the ethical and sustainable lifestyle movement right now?
It's not so much of an excitement thing. When someone comes into a meeting, this actually happened with the president of Levi's one time, and he was giving me a little pushback when I was asking for funding for a project like this Renew Assault project. I was trying to explain or justify my position, and I thought the best way to do it was I took away his bottle of water that he was drinking. What I'm not excited about ethical, sustainable fashion movement. I'm simply thirsty. And anything other than this movement towards more sustainable consumption will deprive this planet of water. When one gene equals 3,781 liters of fresh water, and there are, nearly 750 million people experiencing severe thirst from lack of access to drinking water on a daily basis. We don't need to get excited about fashion. There's an sustainable fashion. There's simply an imperative to change the way we consume, because the way we consume right now in the developed world is depriving the developing world of the basic fundamental human rights: clean air, clean water, and decent soil to grow their food. And so it's the fact that we're making progress to me is exciting, but it's by no means something to celebrate. You don't get to celebrate when you for depriving someone of water less, or for poisoning someone's water less, or for killing someone's soil a little less. You get to celebrate when everyone on the planet has equal access to fresh water and healthy food grown in soil that is healthy. And so we need to stay diligent and mindful of the progress we've made, but also the incredible work that still has to be done.
Wow, it's so powerful, Paul. We really appreciate that. And we totally agree. I mean, I think we've got a lot of work to do, but the more we can sort of roll up our sleeves and find creative ways to tackle some of these problems from a conscious consumer perspective, the better. And so we just want to thank you so much for joining us on Good Together. I, for one, learned a ton. I know you did too, Lisa, right? Yeah.
I really appreciate these conversations. I'm so excited that everyone's been taking their lockdown time to learn and get better informed. I mean, it's really, there's just been this wonderful growth in curiosity. And I've seen it in all from everyone I know and all these different sort of trend lines towards better informed consumers coming out of this. And I'm really, if there is a silver lining, it's too soon to look for one. Hopefully we'll all come out of this just better people and kinder, more empathetic, and certainly better consumers.
Absolutely. Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. As always, you can get show notes and explore lots more content related to all things eco-friendly living by checking out brightly.eco/podcast.
And don't forget to join in on the conversation that's happening on our Facebook group. Simply search Good Together Ethical Shopping and it'll come up. You can also leave us a question through voicemail. The link is on brightly.eco/podcast.
If you're into social media, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, and all of the channels. Our username is brightly.eco.
Finally, we want to leave you with a reminder. Every day is a chance for you to create change, and you're already covered for today since you joined us here on the podcast. Stay kind and live brightly.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.